Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 13th of April. And because this is a shortened day of trading before the long Easter holiday, I'm recording at, looks like 10:55 a.m. And that's British summertime here in London. Okay, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And I'll start with stock markets, where I think what you're well aware of from earlier copy in my audios, that we have we're at a vulnerable stage here for stock markets in terms of a period of a bit of underperformance. At best, I think it would be a lengthy sort of medium-term consolidation. And at worst, it will be a shakeout. I would regard this as a correction, or very unlikely to be a bear market, at least for the major global stock markets. But it may be a little bit unnerving, as it already is. Background, and I'm going to focus particularly on Wall Street because that's going to be such a big influence, remain such a big influence. Valuations are high in the short term, and people are really wondering, you know, are the economic stimulus programs from Trump, are those going to kick in soon enough to justify the valuations that shares have risen to. And there's an uncertainty element there, and that's just enough to lead to a correction, in my opinion. Then, historically, as you know, the second and third quarters of the year are periods of underperformance relative to the first and fourth quarters of the year. And so that's another factor at play here. Now, there's also good news, I think actually some very good news, and that is centering on the U.S. presidency. Trump is actually beginning to look presidential. Now, a lot of people are not convinced that this is going to last, and so he's described as impulsive, irrational, short attention span, changing his mind very rapidly. Well, I think if we can get away from all the tweets, which we have, and the shoot from the hip press conferences and so forth, and greater use of his cabinet, it takes a while to get used to that. That's all very positive. And while Trump can be an extremely irritating person, he is shrewd, and that's good. And what's a part of the evidence of that shrewdness is in the cabinet that he has actually picked a lot of experience, a lot of savvy there overall. And the changes that he's made, I think, have within that cabinet have also been favorable overall. And I think he's fortunate to have Jared Kushner there, his son-in-law, only 34, but evidently highly intelligent and certainly not without some a good element of worldly experience. And then Ivanka, his daughter, Kushner's wife. And I'm all for qualified family people being a high-level assistants for presidents. We've seen it in the past. There's going to be a natural synergy there and trust overall. I think that's an asset rather than a liability. And it's not as if the whole cabinet is based on his family. Okay. Trump looking presidential, but of course he's also trying to rein in Putin, who really felt that he could do pretty well whatever he wanted anywhere, and that I blame a lot of that really on the 8 previous years in the in the White House, where Putin really wasn't challenged. Now, that also creates some anxieties, and which are quite understandable. Now, and there are other regions of global anxiety. There always are. That's the way the world is. It's surprising how little long-term effect these actually have on markets, although they can unnerve people for a short period. But one of them coming up, I think we're 16 days away from the French presidential election. Now, I had been assuming, really, that it looked like Macron had, the fresh-faced young candidate. Everybody says, well, he doesn't have experience, which is no doubt true. But, you know, he's a credible-looking former banker, articulate, and fresh-faced. And I had assumed that that was preferable to a lot of the older politicians who've been tainted one way or another, as you've obviously seen if you've been following this campaign. But the fastest rising position in the polls is held by Mélenchon, and that's made it a real four-way race here overall, and it's created more uncertainty. Mélenchon comes from the far left of the party, and when I look at his economic policies, really that's just exactly what's going to, or what would, drive even more very competent French entrepreneurial types to move to London. Well, where they'd be most welcome. The interesting thing about Mélenchon is that he doesn't look like a sort of a hard left Corbynista type. He looks like a kindly, articulate gentleman, and he is certainly an articulate gentleman. So he went on in a time of uncertainty for France. Has enhanced his appeal considerably. Now, I don't have any more insights on the French election than anyone else, but it is fascinating. It is creating uncertainty, but that will be resolved in a little over 2 weeks' time, or nearly 3 weeks' time. Now, that could be reassuring for European markets overall, or it could be catastrophic if you had either Le Pen or Mélenchon actually winning that post, because they're both anti-euro and also talking about possibly pulling out of the EU. The one benefit of that would be it would probably make the UK's Brexit somewhat easier. But I don't want to digress too much on this. It's creating a fair amount of uncertainty on the continent and elsewhere, and that will be with us obviously for a little while longer, at least. My own view is I still think Macron will win this, but we'll see. Now, I think that among stock markets, I was going to talk about some of my preferred ones on the medium longer term. But first, I want to say that we lost my theme there, partly because I've had a cat just in my lap. Apologies for that, but that's real life, folks. With stock markets generally, we have had a lot of uncertainty over the last few years. It's been a good bull market run, but it's also been described as the most unloved bull market in history. That's been in its favor. And it was really only at the beginning of this year, shortly after the Trump presidential, late last year, and after the Trump presidential election victory, and the prospect of those economic policies, that everybody got quite excited, and a lot of people on the sidelines were converted to the bullish hypothesis. A lot of shorts were actually covered. Good gains on the market and many other markets around the world, and running ahead of themselves. So that's part of the background. And then you look at lead indicators like bank shares. That's what I was trying to remember a moment ago, and I can't jump in my lap. Bank shares had an explosive move to the upside in many markets, most markets, following the Trump victory. And they've rolled over, though, in the last 3 to 4 weeks, and they're seeing a partial retracement of that move overall. That's just another sign that we're susceptible here to a corrective phase. So what that means is that I would be cautious in terms of buying in here right now, as I've been mentioning. I am not overly tempted to sell anything myself, but because I think that, you know, if you sell a position that you really like for the medium to longer term, and in the hopes that you'll be able to buy it back a little lower down, well, you might well be able to do that. But is it going to be a big saving, and will one be actually be able to get back out and get back in without losing money if the correction isn't as big as one was anticipating or hoping for? So I'm going to sit tight here overall. What I am more interested in is looking at what I would want to buy if we had if we do get a decent shakeout. And in some respects, the bigger the better as far as the short term is actually concerned about. And I think in terms of Wall Street, that would mean a decent shakeout in technology shares would create another opportunity. That is going to be an outstanding sector for the rest of our lives and well beyond, in my opinion, given the accelerated rate of technological innovation. But you don't want to pay up too much for these shares. Yes, they can look expensive, so I'm not talking about that so much. They can look expensive because if the companies are, well, it's the more successful ones are seeing huge gains in earnings over the years. So against historic earnings, they look expensive, but against future earnings over the next year or two or more, they look far more attractive. I think in dealing with that tech sector, one really needs to pay attention in terms of the charts. So what I'm talking about is when something has been moving higher on a consistent basis, but then accelerates upwards well away from its rising 200-day moving average, that is certainly indicating that short-term to medium-term risks are increasing and is more vulnerable to a setback. That's the time to prune positions if one's going to actually do so, and not chase and buy while the euphoria is underway. These are perhaps obvious points, but worth reminding ourselves of them. And I also think for a lot of investors, and if you're very keen and spend a lot of time studying the tech sectors, and it certainly is interesting, so I can understand that. And if you have a lot of time to spend on monitoring your investments, then you probably do best on your own. But for other people, the rest of us, I would say, who you are certainly interested, but and you are hands-on, but you don't want to be hovering over the market every single day. After all, there are plenty of other things to do in life. Then a good tech fund would be the instrument to have, and I'll talk a little more about those next week, perhaps. So, technology, and including biotechnology, these are going to be outstanding areas for the long term. They may well be the best performers overall. There will be lots of cyclical performers that will come into play, and we, again, if we're keeping an eye collectively on price charts, we should be able to not only see that change in investor sentiment, but to also be able to check the fundamental developments that are contributing to it. And my feeling is that the stock markets will justify your long-term interest for a good many more years. I've said for years that the transition back to normal monetary policies would be choppy and unnerving from time to time, produce some cyclical, as in short-term, bear markets, but that really the background factors of accelerating technology, and I would also add the trend of lower energy prices. It's been very slow to develop because we've been paying for these subsidized renewables for such a long time, and that's going to actually continue. But you can just looking ahead, you can just think, you get into the next century. You get into the next decade, that will be fine, and you'll see. I think that the trend for energy prices generally will be somewhat lower. A lot of that will depend on our governments actually responding in the right manner with the right policies. The U.S. has been so strong because it developed the fracking principle. Other countries haven't used that. It's been politically controversial, or maybe they're more crowded in terms of the oil regions. But the opportunity is there, certainly, in terms of oil and natural gas to lower those energy costs domestically quite considerably. And then, of course, the steady march of solar power and wind power. And I've been rude about wind power over the years. But again, technology is proving me somewhat wrong on that. I don't think they can compete with solar over the longer term. But wind power is becoming more efficient. And that's another big plus. So that's saying, in terms of a secular bull market, you know, if we get an accelerating rate of technological innovation, and if we also get cheaper energy costs, and well, that's most of the story here. Those are powerful fundamental arguments that will help to fuel that longer-term GDP growth. Okay, enough on those stock markets. Another factor, though, that has been worrying them is the expectation that growth isn't going to pick up all that much. Now, I can certainly understand that, and people look at Japan and say, well, you know, they've been spending 20, 25 years here and not all that much has happened. But look at, but to assume that that's going to be a worldwide phenomenon over the foreseeable future, to me, it just is unrealistic. One of the reasons that people hold that view is they're very, very concerned about the high debt levels that have been established since the financial crisis of 2008. But the best way to lower that debt and is not by a lot of austerity cuts in this type of low inflationary environment. It's to stimulate GDP growth. And that's what the Trump administration is trying to do. And I think we'll see a good many more administrations in other countries doing just exactly that. If you accelerate the GDP growth, then you obviously are able to lower those debt levels overall. On the other hand, if you don't accelerate the GDP growth or don't bring in measures to accelerate growth and just rely on monetary policy, well, then we're in trouble because monetary policy has been effective in terms of protecting us from the worst of economic routes, but we now need fiscal spending, we need tax cuts and other incentives, which I think we're actually going to see. So I'm more optimistic than that consensus in terms of GDP growth potential over the next number of years. Read, incidentally, Adam Posen, his piece, which I have posted. It's in a section that, or in an article rather, that Ambrose Evans Pritchard has produced the article, and it is extremely interesting. I'm an admirer of Adam Posen because I've just followed his comments for a long time. He's a very, very sensible guy. But he thinks we're going to get stronger growth than most people expect. That means interest rates will go up. The stronger growth is also going to produce some more inflation. Now, that will all help the global economy, but it'll cause obvious turbulence in stock markets. So that was always, I think, on the cards in terms of when we got to normalization of monetary policies and a return to a somewhat higher level of overall global GDP growth. Okay. Moving on then to government bonds. Well, they've had a reprieve here in recent months because people have been so nervous about a number of different developments from GDP growth to inflationary policies or big stock market shakeout. And those U.S. 10-year Treasury yields, for instance, today have slipped further down to 2.2249. So people are going back into government bonds, and that has been successful in the very short term. It may well be somewhat successful, over the medium term as well. On a longer term basis, I think it's a disaster. I mean, if you built a portfolio of government bonds and went on a decade's international travel without paying attention to your positions, I think you'd find out that you really, really underperformed in that the huge secular bull market from the mid-70s through to, that's just sort of this huge, huge bull market. Once that starts to end, and it is ending, as your global economy just gradually picks up steam, then you're in bear market territory. Not to go back to the sort of interest rates that we saw during the Volcker years to squeeze out inflation, but certainly interest rates can go up enough to, you know, getting bond yields up to 3, 4, 5% higher in some other countries. That would obviously be costly. Now, so I would avoid those bond markets, and I am going to go back to stock markets here for a minute. And a lot of people think, well, you know, where do I actually go? It's a big world out there. What's actually going to do best? And that's a question we always want to be asking ourselves. And there are plenty of available opportunities, but in terms of promising ones, again, I would continue to to back the USA. A lot of people say, well, Europe is great in terms of individual companies, and I would agree with that. They cost less on average than U.S. equivalent U.S. companies, if there are, or where there are, equivalent U.S. U.S. companies. And there are a number in Germany, fewer in the other other markets overall within the EU. But the political uncertainties are a very big restraining factor, I think, in terms of potential. It's a lot easier in the global beauty contest to say, well, I don't know what's going to, for investors to say, I don't know what's actually going to happen within the EU, whether it's breaking up or not, or whether it's going to come through this. So I'm just going to stay on the sidelines for the time being. And that can cause them to have more difficult performances than might otherwise be the case. If we're looking for emerging markets growth, the big runaway story, and that is India. And I think, again, this is based, well, there is the indigenous talent, but we see plenty of indigenous talent in other countries, but governance, that's the actual key, and also the demographics are incredibly favorable for India. But basically, you've got the best prime minister or president that in the among the global economies. Or I'll put it this way: I don't think there's anybody who's a stronger, more effective, more knowledgeable, more capable leader who also has the common touch than Narendra Modi. And therefore, as long as he's in power, I think India will remain an exceptionally competitive market. Well, China, well, probably at some stage, but there are a lot of uncertainties about China still. And with a pistol in my head or at my temple, I'd buy rather than sell China, but I'd much rather have some of the other emerging market stories, starting with India. Okay, looking on at commodities, the global GDP growth picks up, as I expect it will, taking a long-term view, then we'll see commodities also pick up, at least until we get the next clear recession among the major developed economies, and I don't think that's a short-term prospect in here. And I also feel that, to mention the UK, that the UK economy will probably do far better from the whole Brexit process than a lot of people actually fear. But there are a huge number of uncertainties there that's understandable. And I think the government needs, the UK government needs to try to get out quickly before you've established all of your long-term international trade links to try to do that within that two-year period with the EU making up the rules and trying to get as much money out of the UK as it possibly can. Well, that's that. Don't play the game their way. Leave and then clear the air, and common sense will prevail a bit more, and mutually convenient trade relationships will be reestablished. But that's, in addition to the uncertainty, there's going to be a certain amount of choppiness surrounding all that as well. I think countries like Australia, New Zealand, they're going to do well. Again, short term, New Zealand's getting a significant, susceptible to a significant correction. But on a long term basis, I would be certainly be optimistic of those. And with going back to the rest of the Asian region, as far as which little tigers, so-called little tigers, emerge, successfully as GDP growth picks up. I think most of them probably will. Korea will be one of the most successful, but Thailand, Indonesia, they're all potentially interesting. But until global confidence picks up, global confidence among investors picks up, I think that they may continue to lag behind some of the informed developed markets, and also lag behind what India is achieving and is going to go on achieving. Now, in terms of currencies, I don't have many really long-term views on this sector overall, except I have often made the point that we would see the US dollar, which had that long secular bear phase, that we were now in a long, slowly developing secular bull phase. The logic behind that, I think, is fairly obvious in terms of GDP growth potential, the ability to produce so much of its own energy when energy prices are higher, and to buy in energy when prices are somewhat lower. The dominance in technology, all those factors are extremely are extremely important and will remain so. So I would stick with major companies, major themes for certainly the medium term overall. But again, I want to emphasize, I wouldn't be buying anything in here right now. It's tricky. I would be deciding what you want to buy and at what level it might look attractive. Make a few notes on that. And if only because if those markets and shares get to those levels that you have in mind, there'll be so many people screaming and alarmed and worried that it might put you off. Buy when there's blood in the streets. That's one of the best old adages of all time. Or if you want the more acceptable ones, Warren Buffett's cheaper. Is Warren Buffett's one about hamburgers and how he's thrilled when the cost of hamburgers declines? So on. You know those stories. Okay, among the currencies though, that dollar secular bull trend, I think, is important. The euro is more expensive than it would be because it's a large trading block, so that attracts a certain amount of money. I think the euro will be vulnerable, certainly, if we get a bad election in France, and if we don't get a bad election result in France that unsettles the market. Then, and that would be Le Pen and Mélenchon, or Mélenchon. We have then the Italian situation, where the Five Star Movement is in the lead and could well prevail later this year, probably. And that would be another major threat to the survival of the euro. My own view on the euro is that we'll get more countries leaving, and obviously the southern European ones will be within that group, and you'll get Germany surrounded by a few of the other northern European economies, but a much reduced group overall. My preference would be if we just went back to a free trade area, use the euro if you want, if they want, as a commercial currency. But individual countries, just as we had with their own currencies making their own laws, which we had before the actual euro was launched at the beginning of the century. Okay. And I think among currencies that are likely to appreciate, it's usually those that have the best GDP growth. So I think in terms of India over the very longer term, we benefit from the demographics. Hopefully we get to see India benefit for a long time with Modi, who's got another election in 2 years' time there. But the more successful economies will generally have the stronger currencies overall. And I think I've probably gone on for too long here. But I will wrap this up and just say, whether you're celebrating Easter in one way or another, or just enjoying the additional break that stock markets have over this period, all the very best to all of you.